Hi, I'm Femi Okeh. You're watching The Stream. On today's episode, we mark 1 year of military rule in Myanmar. On February the 1st, 2021, the army seized control, claiming that the election won by the National League for Democracy was fraudulent. Ali Fal, a journalist, was in Myanmar a year ago today.
The day of the coup began for me with a lot of confusion. I was mostly trying to find out what had actually happened, trying to find out who had been detained. And very early on in the day, the internet and the phone signal was cut off, and that confusion started to be replaced by fear of who had been detained, what was coming next. And looking back on it a year later, it's just incredibly depressing. Myanmar still had a lot of issues, but so much progress disappeared in the blink of an eye. And these politicians, these activists, people that I know personally, are still in prison. There's still, many of my friends are still in hiding. The people are still missing. We don't even know where they are, and the situation is still dire.
Is there a path back to democracy for Myanmar? Joining us, we have Wainin Thin and Thinzar Shin Lee. Thank you so much for being with us today. I know you're going to help us unpack what has happened in the past year, what needs to happen in the next year. Wainin, please remind our audience who you are. Welcome back to The Stream.
Thank you, Femi. I'm Wainin and I'm a human rights activist. I've been working on Burma for many years. So last year in particular was very depressing for us.
We always appreciate your reporting, Thin. Please remind our audience who you are. Welcome back to The Stream.
Thanks very much, Femi. My name is Thin. I am a Burmese journalist living in Europe. I cover Burma, but I'm also the co-founder of a storytelling project called The Kite Tales in Myanmar.
Good to have you. And Thinzar Shin Lee, welcome back to The Stream. It's really good to have you back with us. Please remind our audience who you are and what you do.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me here. This is Thinzar Shin Lee. I'm the advocacy coordinator for a grassroots civil society coalition called Action Committee for Democracy Development.
Thank you very much, all of you, for being on our show today. And if you are watching on YouTube, you can be in our comments section. Those comments can be wrapped into today's discussion. Put them right here, and I will do my best to get them into the programme. Oh, my goodness, we remember those protesters, those brave protesters from a year ago. How will people who are in Myanmar, Thin, mark this one-year anniversary?
Well, you know, the protesters, pro-democracy forces, have been calling for a silent strike. There have been a couple of silent strikes in the past couple of months that have been very, very successful. But it remains to be seen how things will play out tomorrow, because the junta has threatened businesses and shops that plan to close to be part of the silent strike. And they have also threatened arrest with anybody who, you know, plan to be part of it. So I think it remains to be seen whether there will be a silent strike tomorrow. But I think we can still be sure, regardless of whether there's going to be a strike. I think people are still extremely furious about the coup, and they are still very, very much in favor of the pro-democracy forces.
Wainin, I see you nodding. Shin Lee, I see you nodding as well. Wainin, you start first.
Yes, you know, this is a pattern by the military now. I mean, since last year, they've been threatening people not to go out on the street to protest. They even told on the state media that they would shoot and kill people if they go out to protest. But, you know, two things I want to say is it's been a year under the military coup, a military dictatorship. But one is the military hasn't been able to consolidate power because of people's courage and determination to get rid of this military. And second is, yes, it's depressing, but also we have to acknowledge so much achievement by the people of Burma, you know, in terms of international achievement or in terms of, you know, the national achievement. We have to acknowledge that. And these courageous people are still standing up against the Burmese military, and I have no doubt they will find a creative way to join the silent strike tomorrow.
Shin Lee, go ahead.
Yes, when you say when you're under a coup attempt or a coup or under military dictatorship, I would say we are also marking
and commemorating a year of our resistance and revolution for freedom, freer and fair Burma, like a new nation. So that's the spirit that all the people inside Burma, that we will be celebrating our resistance, our fighting spirits against all forms of oppressions coming from different angle, but we stay resist. And that's how the coup plan by the junta is not yet successful, like not 100% implemented yet. So that's the spirit. So also there will be other different strikes happening tomorrow. There are many other different strike committee, general strike committee for ethnic nationalities. They've been calling for a week-long action. So people have to be kept, be aware of different activities, like popping up in different areas. People just have to join them, like naturally. And they all will be organized in a safe manner. So that's basically, there will be other different calls, like red campaign, marking our blood, a resistance. So I really hope to see other different sort of people joining in different manners, not just offline, but also online.
Femi, if you don't mind me jumping in very briefly, say that, the silent strike is just one form. There are so many others. And I also want to just reiterate what Dinza just said, that the coup is not yet complete. Mm. For all the weapons and the power that the junta has, it still has not been able to control the country. Like Wei Nin said, they had not been able to consolidate their power. A report that just came out maybe a week ago, a briefing paper on the resistance forces in Myanmar, found that 200 townships out of 330 are now under some control of local administration that is aligned with the National Unity Government. So, that shows that even if we're not seeing big mass protests that we used to see, resistance is still happening in so many forms.
And it's really important to add, I know you know this, Thin, and all of our guests know this, that if you protest, if you mark the anniversary in Myanmar, the junta will punish you. You will be seen as somebody who's been treasonous and there will be repercussions. So even though there is that threat, people still intend to protest. Wei Nin, I want to show this to our audience, and I'm interested in your take here. This is from the Assistance Association for Political Prisoners, parentheses Burma, also known as Myanmar. So this is in the past year, 8,835 people arrested, charged or sentenced that we know of. 1,967 have evaded arrest, so on the run, in hiding, killed that we know of. 1,503, sentenced 661. What do these statistics tell us about the past year, Wei Nin?
I think you said it when you repeated that we know of. I think that's a very important phrase, because we don't know how many people have been forcibly disappeared in remote areas or in ethnic area, and we don't know how many people have been killed in ethnic areas. So, of course, these are the figures that we know, and they are in prison, but there are so many other people that we are not aware of. And even this more than 8,800 people, many of them, we don't know where they're being kept or how their condition is, and most of them have been horrifically tortured. And if you're a female political prisoners, you go through sexual harassment, rape and other sort of harassment just because of your gender. So there are so many human rights violations happening in detention centers, depending on your gender. If you are LGBTQ, from LGBTQ community, you face other form of horrific harassment as well. So it's very devastating. And, most of these political prisoners are young people. They are students. They should have been in school. They should have been pursuing their dreams to become doctors and teachers and nurses, future leaders. But now they've been, thrown into prison for standing up against the junta, and it's really depressing.
So, in that point, I just want to add, this number, 8,000, it's not yet an updated one. It's more than 10,000 now within a year. And just to take notes of it, we already have around 500 political prisoners before the coup, and now we have more and more. Like, we could see the increased number of political prisoners since the last whole year. Even before the coup, activists like us feel increased pressure, and we've been reminding all the politicians and different international communities that arrest season is coming, because during the pandemic in 2020, the activists being facing different imprisonments, like 7 years in prison within a week without a fair trial and so on. But with all the election news, you know, during that time, we all were neglected. And now we are seeing like increased number of political prisoners. Obviously, now there's no U-turn for us.
Let me bring in an extra voice into this conversation. I'm going to play this new voice to you, Thin. He is Kim. He's an independent researcher and an analyst. And this is what he told us a few hours ago. Have a listen and then respond directly off the back of Kim's thoughts.
The junta is facing a national uprising that is more united and stronger than anything it has faced since the military first took power in 1962. This federal democracy movement includes the loyalist pro-democracy supporters of Aung San Suu Kyi, the ethnic federalist movements whose people have been the target of decades of ethnic violence and who have been resisting centralized state control, over 400,000 striking civil servants, and extremely impressive Gen Z youth groups, women's groups, and other civil society organizations.
So the report, the briefing paper that I quoted just now, that said, you know, 200 townships out of 330 under some resistant forces, actually is co-written by Kim. So he knows what he's talking about. And I totally agree with him. You know, despite all the devastation and the trauma that I think, collective trauma that we've seen in Myanmar, there's also been a massive transformation in the society. The country is more inclusive and united than it has ever been. And we are, you know, the National Unity Government, I would say it's not perfect, but it's the most progressive that we have seen. And there is an understanding. And I hope that if only we are giving a chance, I think we could have a really bright future.
All right,
we just need to be given that chance.
So let me just open up some of the criticism, some of the pushback that has been made from a protest. And I'm going to put this to you, Shanley, that started off as non-violent, deliberately so, that has now turned into, in some parts of Myanmar, a violent resistance. Talk to us about that and what the protesters, what the resistance movement is thinking when they are having to take up arms. Do they have to take up arms?
So the resistance, the first revolution, when we launched the revolution, the resistance has been always nonviolent and still is nonviolent, because there are always different strikes and protests happening across the whole country. They're not skipping a day. And later on, they turn into violent, mainly because the junta being crashing down using different leader forces, you know, and power to crash us down. And then they, the resistance, the strike committee, they have to defend themselves with everything they have. So they first defend with the, you know, the tire or the sandbag and everything they have in their own community. And then later on, these people have to join in the already existing different ethnic and revolutionary forces. These ethnic and revolutionary forces been resisting the same institution for the past 7 decades. For example, 31st January, just yesterday, marking 73rd anniversary of the Karen Revolution Day. So you can see how long this resistance been. So these protests happening almost every day in Myanmar stay nonviolent. So they are still striking, but they have that creative way of striking. For example, like they just appear in somewhere for like 15 minutes and then they just disappear. It's like a flash strike kind of thing. So these kind of protests already happen in rural area where military is not in place. They organize around 300 people in each villages, and they kind of gave a lot of awareness reasons to the villagers, all sort of things. So they're not even skipping a day. The protests are always there.
Some thoughts here from YouTube. Wenyin, I'm going to share them with you, if I may. Hao Xian Suan, what are your perspectives on the scope of this spring revolution, Wenyin?
I think it's been a year, and our determination to uproot this military is stronger than ever. Like Binza said, and also Methin said, is that no one has stopped from resisting. We are doing in every way possible across the country that you can see people are coming out to protest in different way. People are resisting in many ways possible. And, you know, people, it's been a year. People joined civil disobedience movement and they haven't been paid at all. And they are determined to continue that. And they are not paying electricity bill because the money will go to the military. So they are doing all sort of creative way to resist that military. So that's why it's been a year. It doesn't matter how many people they threaten to kill or how many people they thrown into prison. The military can't consolidate power. You know, the only they have weapons and the only tactic they have is violence. And that's the only thing they know how to use it against people. Whereas our people have intelligence, creativity, courage and resilience that the military lacks. So that's the encouraged thing for us to take note of.
I think also just very briefly, you know, there's a lot of talk about violence. And I guess personally, I would rather that we also win this in a non-violent way. But, you know, this is a military that shoot unarmed protesters in the head. This is a military that use a car to plow into unarmed protesters. We are sitting somewhere safe and we're discussing this, you know, without having to worry about how we sleep at night. My friends, my family, my former colleagues, this is their life day to day in Myanmar. And I don't think, you know, it's very difficult to sit somewhere safe and then judge the decisions that they had to make in order to actually survive.
Can you talk to us, then about you make a good point about what people are having to take on and how they are living. We've done stream episodes about COVID in Myanmar and the economy, even though Myanmar is still able to operate with international allies, the economy is degrading. What is it like for the people that you know who are existing in Myanmar right now? What is that situation?
I mean, the economy is in tatters. You know, people are having to live through runaway inflation, soaring prices. The UNDP has said that probably, you know, half of people in Myanmar will probably be living in poverty this year. The UN released a document in December saying that 14.4 million people, that's more than one out of four people, need humanitarian assistance. I mean, that's how bad we're talking about. I've been talking to, you know, farmers and people in the agriculture sector as well. And, you know, again, we focus a lot on conflict and politics and violence, but people who are not even displaced, people who are not even in conflict zone, they are having such hardship just, you know, living, just trying to survive. And there are people that I've been speaking to in the agricultural heartlands, the places where some of the major cropping areas in Myanmar, they're struggling. Farming households are having to sell long-term assets, you know, livestock, their food storage in order to survive, in order to just be able to eat. You know, that has serious long-term consequences for the whole country in terms of humanitarian needs. And the international community really, really need to see this from the perspective of humanitarian and not just politics.
All right, Finn, I promised that our international community online that they could be part of this program as well. This is what Mark Brown says on YouTube. I lived in Myanmar for 8 years until last April because of the coup. The lack of support from the rest of the world, especially the UN and, of course, ASEAN, has been appalling. That is Mark's take. But I also want to bring into our conversation, we cannot talk about Myanmar without talking about the Rohingya, and also asking international community, what are you doing? This is what we heard earlier from our border community.
We Rohingya people are worrying that Myanmar military will escalate violence against Rohingya, and we are worried terrible situation can happen to the Rohingya this year 2022. and international community is not doing enough. International community should do more support, justice and accountability matters, supporting ICJ case and more universal jurisdiction case. Taking action against military is really important.
Yet the world has not really acted as in the way that it needs to. There needs to be more political pressure on the Myanmar junta, including coordinated economic sanctions and recognition of their past crimes of what they did to the Rohingya as genocide. The U.S. needs to take that official step.
There has been some response from the international community, i.e. big corporations coming out of Myanmar. Shinley, tell us about that. Is it enough? Is it the start of something more?
So when we talk about what we can do to help Myanmar, right, to be in solidarity with the country, we always say there are two things that you can do as the least things. The first is the target ascension. And the second is to stop the arms flows to Myanmar junta, cut the arms, like, impose arms embargo, and also target ascension on the military and military businesses. So these are the two least things the international community can do to help Myanmar and to slow down the military violence that's happening every day. But this is not yet happening as much as it should be. So today, there are some countries like US, UK, and Canada imposing on different individuals. We welcome it, but why only these countries all the time? What about our neighbors like India, Korea, Japan, Singapore, ASEAN? What are they doing? So obviously, it's the world should act together in a collaborative manner. It's not just a matter of only a few countries who are already doing what they are supposed to do. We need more people joining in different collaborative action. Also, for the ICJ case, now we don't see more countries joining the ICJ case or the UN Security Council passing a resolution. They have never passed a resolution since the coup. Mm-hmm. So obviously, it's never enough for the people.
All right, so oil companies, well, I was being very specific here, so I'm going to just bring them up so that we can see what's happening. Oil companies are leaving Myanmar. Ibrahim on YouTube says the only way to save the people of Myanmar is to increase the economic pressure on Myanmar and thus increase the need to actually have the international community seeing that they can control what the junta is doing. One more thought, and then I'm going to come to you, Wayne, in. And this thought comes from Mimi Kant, who told us this earlier.
The terror and the brutality of the military increase every single day. And despite that fact, the international governments are staying slow and very slow in responding, only issuing statement. And now is the time to step up. Now is the time to stop the revenue flows and arm flows to the Myanmar military, especially governments like Australia and South Korea that has not done anything to take this military accountable. Now is the time.
What thought would you like to leave us with, Wayne, in on the anniversary of the coup in Myanmar? What do you want us to be thinking about?
First of all, international community should be standing with people of Burma. And second is touching on the point about accountability. The Burmese military has been committing these atrocities against ethnic nationalities in my country for many, many decades. There is no accountability, there is no justice. So that created a sense of impunity for the military. Mm-hmm. And genocide of the Rohingya happened, no accountability whatsoever. So now this is the time for the international community to step up and hold the military accountable for all the atrocities they have committed. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, this cycle of impunity will continue and Burmese people will continue to suffer. So that's what I want to mention.
Yeah, in that point, I want to jump in to this. Like, at the same time, we really need to change the narrative, acting military as one of the political stakeholders. They are not political stakeholders. They are criminals. They are perpetrators. We need to hold them accountable. So we need to treat them as such as they are. So this is another message from me.
Shinley, thank you so much. Let me just show you where all of our guests can be found on Twitter so you can be following what's happening in Myanmar via their work. This is Wayne In. and thin. And Shin Lee, thank you very much for your thoughts and your comments on YouTube. I will see you next time. Take care, everybody.